This episode is dedicated to you. That's right, our beautiful listeners, because Navigating Your 20s podcast recently hit 1,000 followers on Instagram, which I'm so grateful for. And as a little special thank you, this is a very cheeky bonus episode for August with a very amazing guest. Before I introduce him, let's roll the titles. Hello, my fellow confused and probably hungover 20-somethings, and welcome back to Navigating Your 20s, a podcast pointing you in the wrong direction with me, Kate Whittaker. Time for more drunken chats on the mishaps and mind boggles of adulthood, from the time you left your passport in a toilet in Prague to the time you got fired twice. So grab a beer, even if it's 10 a.m, and let's roll the titles. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 10, the cheeky little bonus episode that I promised. Today's guest, I am flipping well excited for, and I'm really honoured that he's taking the time to be on the podcast. Tamid Chowdhury is the co-founder of Here for Good, a charity providing free migration services to EU citizens and their families living in the UK. He read law with English at uni, graduating in 2016, and that autumn was part of the team that successfully took the government to court over its Brexit position. And quite deservedly, he was recently named on the Forbes under 30 list as a social entrepreneur. Pretty impressive stuff. And I'm joined by him now. He's smiling to himself because he's heard his bio. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Kate. It's always so embarrassing when you hear that read back to you.
Yeah, it is.
When you're writing it, you're like, oh, I need to fit in as much of my CV as possible. But then you hear it back and you're like, what a twat.
Yeah, it's the third person, you're like, oh god, because you wouldn't be at a party and be like, hi, I found a, you know what I mean, like, it's always like, oh god, like. Yeah, I feel you. Thank you so much for doing the podcast today though. Are you enjoying week 67 of lockdown?
yeah, I am, just about. It's so weird, but This is a nice break. I haven't done a podcast yet, so this is the first
good
for lockdown.
Yeah. Today we're talking all about how to start a business in your 20s. And little disclaimer, it's not as overwhelming and scary and crazy as you might think. Tamid reveals all his top tips on how to turn a hobby or a side hustle into a job, and how you can really just launch your own business. He also explains how to make a business model, how to register your business or charity, finding your purpose, and then managing your goals and expectations. Plus a little bit of, you know, the admin involved, finance, asking for help, and why it's actually amazing to make mistakes. So just to start us off, could you tell us about your business Here for Good? Because it's just like so, so awe-inspiring.
Sure. So we founded just over 2 years ago, to provide free immigration advice, as you said, to EU citizens who are living in the UK and their families. And I guess what we wanted, you know, I was born in the UK. It's not an issue that directly affects me. But I was very passionate in the run-up to the EU referendum, as I'm sure many of your listeners were as well, and wanted to do something practical to be able to make a difference after the referendum. And I guess the sense of injustice is what sort of drove me and my co-founder to set up the charity. You know, it's a group of citizens, EU citizens living in the UK, a group of citizens who had no say over a decision that's now completely changed their lives in so many different ways. And that's what we were really trying to address when we set up. And yeah, it's been quite a journey since.
Yeah, that's so amazing. I think it's so impressive to even just start a business, but when it's something that's so like impactful to society and life-changing to so many people, it's just even more incredible. And I know a lot of people that have wanting to start businesses, especially in lockdown, everyone's like, oh, okay, well, I make bracelets, yeah, how can I turn that into a business? So I think it's just, how do you even start to, you know, being so young, to think this could be more than just a project? How would you even start a business? It's such an open question, but...
So I think I think there are two things that you need when you start out. One is to just recognise that you can do it. So just, you know, just have the confidence. And I know it's really easy to say have the confidence. There are probably lots of people that will listen and think, well, how do I just get that confidence in the first place? But, you know, believe in yourself and believe that you can do it if you really put your mind to it. And the second part is very much linked, but it's the other side of the coin, which is recognise that it's fine to make mistakes and you don't have all the answers. So be confident, but don't be arrogant, I guess, is the sort of mantra there. When you're sort of setting up, I think I went through maybe 10 different business plans for Here for Good when we founded, different ways that it could work, different models. None of them were crap. And actually the one that I thought was the best isn't what we're currently doing now. You learn things as you go through the process, and I think that's the most important thing, is that you, especially in the early days, you sort of want to be flexible and you want to find what actually works rather than what you had your vision for working. You sort of need to obviously maintain your vision, but don't be so wedded to it that you can't be willing to be flexible and think about things in different ways, because you might not have all the answers.
Yeah, and for those people that have no idea how to even start a business, what is a business model? For myself as well, because I'm like, what is that?
Sure. So Here for Good is a charity, and that's slightly separate to how you would register other businesses. But it's all basically the same principles. So with a charity, you'd apply to the Charities Commission and you'd register and you'd go through a whole process and you'd name your trustees and that sort of thing. You'd have a governing constitution and those sorts of things. For business, you'd register with Companies House, and it's exactly the same. So you'd write to Companies House and you'd say, okay, I'm setting up this business, this is what the business is going to do, these are the directors. And that's the sort of technical way to set up any organization. It's much easier to set up a business than it is to set up a not-for-profit business or a charity, just because you're then eligible for tax benefits and things if you're a charity, and it's to avoid money laundering and those sorts of things.
Yeah, don't do that, guys.
So it's understandable. But to set up a company takes, 2 days. You just come up with a name that no one else has for the business that you're choosing. So, there are going to be lots of businesses called similar things. But if they're working in different areas or locations, or they're selling different products or whatever, it's fine for them to have the same name. But then from that point, it's just, you're just running with it, really. I guess you're the more important part of your question, that's the sort of technical part of like how you set up a business or set up an organization, but the more important part is, what do you actually have to do to make it get off the ground and make it successful? So the business plan, I think the first part, which is something that you have to do when you're registering a charity anyway, is to really think about what your purpose is and what your idea is. And actually, it's beneficial to do this for a company before you register the company as well, because otherwise you're sort of just going to end up with this company that you're legally responsible for and you have no idea what you're doing. I mean, I've done that in the past myself, so I made that mistake. What you want to do is figure out why are you setting up the business? What are you doing differently? It's the same things that you do at university, when you're writing an essay, the who, what, why, when, where, how, all of those things. And if you just structure it like that, like you would an essay, like you would a project that you would have already worked on in other parts of your life, that's probably the easiest way, because once you have that understanding, everything else will sort of fit into place. You'll think, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do, and if how I'm going to do it is going to take 3 years, then naturally my business plan is going to be at least 3 years, and you go from there. If you think about when or why you're doing certain things, that will inform your budgets, and you'll be able to map that further out and that sort of thing. So I guess when you're coming up with a business plan, the easiest way to do it is to start with what you know and what you think would need to go into it, and then just ask people, just ask for advice. That's the most important thing that I've learned over the last few years. Is there are lots of people who are very happy to give really fantastic advice, usually for free, and willing to help you and take advantage of that as much as you can.
That's definitely something I've learned, because I don't know why, but I feel the need, like I just need to know everything, and it's like, nah, I'm 23, I can definitely ask people for advice, but for some reason in my head, I'm just like, no, I need to know it all, I can't ask advice, oh my God. But it's like, I'm getting used to now being like, so what's that? How's that work? How's that? Because that's how you learn and grow, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, because, especially for us, we're not out of university, we've not been out of university for that long. And when you're doing exams and you're sort of studying for exams, you're building up to, how much do I know? And I should know everything, otherwise I'm being marked against for not knowing something, essentially, when you're doing an exam. And that's not how businesses work and not how charities work and organizations. You know, you're not going to have all the answers. And I personally don't think, at least my experience, that people hold it against you for not knowing the answers, because that's the whole point of having experts and in different areas, is that some people will know things and some people will know other things, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, different people bring different things, don't they? And that brings us really nicely onto each person has unique interests, unique passions that they feel strongly about. So I guess part of starting a business is finding something really unique, isn't it? But how do you go about finding something unique without kind of trying to be too, cliche, or without forcing interest in something, you know, that you're not actually that keen on, but just because no one else has done it? How do you even go about being unique and finding your own voice?
I think that's really hard. My personal opinion is, if something is already being done really well and you can't, and you don't know how you would improve it or whatever, you might as well just join them and work for them or work with them.
Yeah.
You know, if there was another charity doing what Here for Good does, we wouldn't have set up, because if there's another charity, then we can use our expertise and help them, and they can do a great job. Same as businesses. If there's a business that's already making a great product or providing a great service, and there isn't a way that you are interested in improving it, then join them. But that's really what it's grounded in, is what do you enjoy? And I think it's so much more important to be guided by your passions when you're setting something up than it is to be guided by what's unique and what's going to make you money and stuff, because I think I get that that's important, but it will follow. You know, if you're really passionate about something, you'll find a way to make it work, and you'll find a way to make it different, and it, you won't get bored of it. You'll be willing to put in the hard work to make that happen. The businesses that I've seen start and fail and that sort of thing is when people aren't really passionate about it, and they're trying to find a niche for themselves in a crowded market for the sake of it, and actually they'd be much better off just thinking about what they actually want to achieve and having a go and to having the confidence to try and do that, because they're so passionate about it, they sort of find a way through, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess it's the same as like writing a book or a song, isn't it? It's like you've got to do it every day, so if you are doing it to please other people because you think it's what everyone needs or whatever, it's just, you're going to get bored of it and you're going to lose interest if it's all about the money or just trying to be niche for the sake of it. And I think it's interesting, because I think I've seen some, I think starting a business can sometimes be quite glamorized. Like, I've seen some posts on social media, like Instagram, where it's like some dude sat in a bar in like Hawaii with like a laptop, like, you too could start a business, click this link. And I'm thinking, I don't think it's that easy, pal. Like, I think it's actually quite complex. And I think it's all about having that grit and determination and kind of belief in your project. So how would you kind of navigate the highs and lows, and how do you stay motivated if it's just kind of you to start with in your room, like, oh, I've got this idea that I really want to do?
Well, the last thing that you just said is exactly how you stay motivated. You try to avoid it just being you in your room. And I found that really early on. I got a group of people around me, got a co-founder, had other supporters, members of our board and things like that on side very early and involved very early, because once, you know, you can have those days, and everyone has those days where you're not really sure what you're doing, and that can be either because you've set something up that you're not sure what its purpose is or whether you're doing a good job, or it can be any part of your life that you have that feeling. But when you have other people around you who are just as motivated and just as passionate about the same thing as you, it sort of drives you to keep doing better and to keep improving, especially if you're the founder or the co-founder. You sort of have that responsibility to sort of power through. So that's one thing. Definitely, I think having people around you takes away that feeling of isolation and that stress that sometimes comes with pursuing some ideas. I think the other thing is to recognize that, you know, there are going to be some days that are bad. You know, there are going to be some days that are really, really difficult. I don't know if you've had this when you've been DJing, Kate, but like there are probably some days where you're trying to create a set and you know the creativity is just not there for whatever reason. And sometimes you just have to be like, I don't know if you agree, but you know, sometimes you have to be like, yeah, it's a shit day.
Yeah.
Let me go have a drink and I'll get back to it tomorrow.
The other day I put two songs together and I was like, oh my God, I'm onto something. This is sick. And I was like, it's the same song. I put the same song together. Oh my God. I was like, right, I need a beer. I'm going outside. I'm done. I can't do this. But yeah, it is just about like accepting that we're all human and you're allowed to have those days where you're like, I just need to watch Netflix and that's super fine.
Exactly.
And I think when you are managing your expectations, do you think a lot of businesses perhaps don't set off in the first year because people think, oh, well, you know, by the first month we'll draw in this massive profit and we'll be listed in the Times and we'll have all this, you know, and it is a long process and it doesn't happen overnight. So I think, how do you go about setting goals and managing expectations in the first part of it?
Yeah, I think this comes back to writing a good business plan, I guess, which is, I had very lofty ambitions for Heavy Good, and you know, I've been very fortunate that a lot of them have been met, but it, you know, as I said at the start, it's not what we thought it was going to be when we founded and when we set it up. I think what you need to do, especially on a business side, I think, is have almost three business plans, have something, you know, what is realistic and a really good outcome for you to do over the next 3 or 5 years. Have something that's a little bit more like, okay, well, if things don't go to plan, what's the minimum that I am willing to invest in this and not walk away, or whatever that might be. And that might be, you know, as long as we break even within the first 2 years, that's my minimum requirement, because I've got a family, whatever it might be. And then you have your like reach business plan, which is, okay, well, if things are going really well, how can we have a model to scale and how can we have a model to grow and that sort of thing. And by just planning that early, and again, being flexible about all of them, because there's probably no chance that you're going to land perfectly in any one of those three situations. But by thinking about them, at least, nothing's going to take you by surprise either way, because a lot of other businesses fail, not just because, you know, they had too high ambitions. It's because their ambitions weren't high enough. And then they're suddenly growing at a faster rate than they can manage. And they don't know what to do because they never thought that was a possibility. So it's both sides of things. It's just trying to, as best you can, think ahead about the different scenarios that could play out, and then having the flexibility and the support around you to be able to navigate those.
And welcome back to part two, where I'm joined by Tamid and we're talking all about how to casually launch a business in your 20s. Now it's time for, you know, the really high budget part of the episode where all my savings go, guys. It's time for the Funny Games Game Show. Okay, Tamid, so your word on giving everyone some advice on starting a business is tools.
So tools are really important, because without tools, you can't build a foundation. You can't. This is just complete bullshit, isn't it?
It's fine.
Tools is about what you can use to help you do the job. And I guess in starting a business, there's so many different places you can look. I mean, there's the obvious one, which is resources that you can do. Online, there's so many sort of self-help books, self-help videos, and all that sort of thing on how to start a business. I guess this episode, to some extent as well, of the podcast is an example of the sorts of resources that people can access. So there's that, which I think is a tool for people to use. And then I think the other one is the tools in their lives around them. It's not a great... I don't think my mum would be very happy if I called her a tool. but you know, ultimately, that's what it is, because it's a means to helping you achieve what you want to achieve.
When you are starting out, you do have to be realistic and also like kind to yourself, especially if you're as young as you were when you started. Do you think your 20s is a good time to kind of start? Because I guess you've had a lot of people go, oh my God, but you're so young, like, oh my God. And especially if you're like managing people that are older than you, it must be a little bit like, I don't know, like you don't want to come across as like, oh, but then, you know, it's not your fault that you're younger than them. So do you think your 20s is a really good time to start a business, because you can be a bit flexible and a bit like, oh, I'm learning, let's just do it, I'm young,
I think it's a fantastic time to set something up, and I'd really, really recommend it to people. There's nothing quite like doing something that's your own, whether that's a business or a project or whatever it is, or, you know, a hobby, when you achieve something that you've sort of built up from the ground, there's no comparison. And when you're in your 20s, as you rightly said, there's so much creativity and energy, especially if you're right out of university, you've got friends going into all sorts of areas that can help you and support you. It's a really fantastic time to set something up. I was 22 when we had the idea for Here for Good and we started getting it off the ground, and I have no regrets about starting it that young. There are challenges that come with it. I'd say there are probably two. One is essentially, you know, you have to put the time in. And especially if you're that young, you don't necessarily have the funding and stuff in place, so you might have to work at the same time and all that sort of stuff. So you're essentially, in a way, doing two jobs. So it is hard work, and maybe you might lose some of the fun in a way of being in your 20s. But actually, if you're really passionate about it, I think it can be equally fun to going out and getting hammered every night. You can find a balance with your social life as well. You know, it's the same as having a busy job. You just have to find the right balance that works for you, and that's absolutely fine. You know, run it at your own pace. The second challenge is other people taking you seriously, which can be difficult. You know, whether that's funders or whether it's potential partners or whatever it is, that's definitely hard. And, you know, especially when you get to the point where you're employing people, if they're older than you and that sort of thing. But again, people recognize, and increasingly now with sort of the tech giants and how young some of those individuals were when they founded their companies, people recognize that young people can innovate and create and manage and build something big. Obviously, not everyone is going to be a Mark Zuckerberg.
I
think people are more. Yeah, but people are, you know, we've changed our way. Society's changed its way of working. It's not that people sort of join a company when they're 21 and then work in that company until they retire and they work their way up. And it's that, you know, linear progression. People recognize that we have a different way of working now. And I think they're more amenable, as long as you have that passion and you know what you're talking about. You know, that's the most important thing. And I keep coming back to the passion, because I think that's the most, you know, I think that is vital. If you're passionate about it, everything else will fall into place, which is why it's so much more important to be passionate than to try and tick every box that, you know, in a book that you've read about making a successful business.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I suppose you kind of have to expect people to be a bit like, oh, you're 22, you want to do, oh, okay, oh, because then it gives you more drive to be like, well, actually, yes. And, you know, it's such a big thing to do. So I guess skepticism from people, no matter what age you are, is going to be very much kind of there. So are there any kind of lessons that you've learnt from things going wrong, or perhaps having to change your plans last minute, and just kind of, you know, things not going quite so smooth as you kind of anticipated?
There's definitely been a few. I'm trying to think if there's an actual example that I can give, but there's so many things that have happened that I'm not sure there is. I think in terms of tips, what I would say is, especially in your early days of setting something up, and I'd say this sort of lasted at least for the first year of Here for Good, every crisis or everything that looks like it's something that's gone wrong seems like the biggest thing in the world. Even down to like a grumpy email from one of our board members or something like that would stress me out, and I'd just be like, oh my god, or like not getting minutes sent at the right time, or like not getting a funding application in on time, things like that. It seems like the biggest thing in the world, and you know, sometimes you make mistakes and it's not ideal, but you know, it's not that deep. that's the sort of mantra that I've sort of lived by. Things aren't that deep. You know, you learn from them, and you just sort of, you know, you recognize that there's been an issue or there's been a challenge, and it's much easier said than done, but you sort of try and work the problem and you try and figure out, okay, well, this has happened now. What can I do to minimize the impact of it? And what can I do to make sure that it doesn't happen again? And even if you piss people off or you mess something up along the way, having that willingness to reflect on yourself and what you've done and actually make a difference to your behaviour or your decisions in the future is something that everyone will appreciate, and you'll be much better for it. And that's probably the most important thing that I've learned is to hold your hands up when you make a mistake, I guess, and genuinely try to make it better next time.
Definitely. People don't expect perfection, do they? They just expect, like, honesty and just good communication. I'm always, exactly. Me and my friends are like, good communication, like, we get so annoyed when people are, like, really, like, blasé and just aren't, you know, it's like, just, I think if you're just honest with people and just a nice person in general, I think people are a lot more open to your ideas and your kind of, yeah, even if they're really wacky, they're like, okay, I'm listening, like, come on.
works a lot better. Exactly. And, you know, this is advice that, you know, we might give to someone who's setting up a business or a charity or whatever it is, but it's stuff that you know from real life anyway, you know, it's stuff that you learn from your friendships and your relationships and all that sort of thing in everyday life, how you interact with people. And ultimately all businesses, in my opinion, come down to how you interact with people, because you're always going to, you know, even if it's a product business, you're constantly having to sell your products or interact with manufacturers and all that sort of thing. If you're a charity or a company that's providing a service, even more so, relationships and how you work with other people is so important. And just think about how you'd want to interact and work with people in your social life. And if you take that approach, I think it can be really helpful in a business setting as well.
That's so true. I love that. Just for people who are listening and thinking, oh, I can do a business, yeah, I can do that, but I don't really know what I'm passionate about. How would you, I suppose that is such a common question you ask in your 20s, like, what do I even like? What am I passionate about? But how would you recommend someone to go and find their passions? Is it just about trying loads of different things and setting up Instagram pages for coffee reviews and that sort of thing? Is it just about trying different things and seeing what you, you know, vibe off?
Yeah, I definitely suggest that's 100% the thing. I didn't do that. I sort of fell into this and I sort of knew what I was passionate about when I was at university or I just graduated. So I sort of knew that this is an area. But yeah, if you're not sure, I think definitely do the scattergun approach. You'll find something that you're really passionate about. And at worst, you find a hobby, which is great. Like, yeah. I always love finding new hobbies.
Yeah.
I used to hate going on walks. Now during lockdown, I've gone for a walk every day and it's the best thing ever.
Everyone's become a runner. Everyone's on that Strava app, including myself. Like, I posted a daily, like, little walk today, guys. I don't think anyone cares, but I'm like, yeah, I did another walk.
It's that thing, you know, you just find things and they sort of fall on your lap in a way. And that's great. Some of the best things come from that. The other thing I'd say is a lot of the best ideas and the things that you're most passionate about come from when you're talking about them. And so don't keep ideas to yourself. You know, if you want to run an Instagram page about your favorite coffee and get reviews for it, see if a friend will do it with you. You know, that sort of thing, like, chat about it and try to brainstorm, even if the other person or other people don't end up going along the whole journey with you. You can find out so much more about what you actually like and what you actually enjoy by sharing it with other people. And that, again, in my experience, has definitely been one of the most important things, is having people on the journey with you makes it so much more enjoyable the whole time.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? If you can just bounce, especially when you're creative minded like us, I think having people to bounce off, you know, is so important, because you just develop the idea and the concept rather than just going back and forth in your head just like, oh, I don't know.
You wouldn't ever have a hobby, or you'd very rarely have a hobby or a group of friends or whatever that you didn't make because of that interaction with other people. Like, your friendship group is completely based on who you get along with and who has similar interests to you. All your hobbies are based on a group or like a thing that you've decided to do, usually with other people. It's such a great way to just find out more about yourself and to sort of then think, how can you do it more, or like do it in a different way? And that's where the best creativity comes from, I think.
Yeah, no, it's so true. I think as a creative person, it's so important to share your ideas and not feel like, even if you think it's a really shit idea, just whack it out there, because someone might be like, oh, I thought about, you know, having a mustache oil business as well, you know, a lot, and I think it could really be something, and you can just really, really get it creative with it. And speaking of being creative with things, I think a lot of branding and advertising these days relies a lot on social media, because, you know, hashtag influencers are such a thing, and a lot of advertising and revenue comes from Instagram, which is just a bit mad, really, from growing up in the 90s. But how do you use social media to kind of define your brand, and does social media play a big part in Here for Good?
Yeah, I think it's so vital now. I mean, our social media presence, and I think for any business that's setting up, you'd think way more about social media and what you're doing on social media than you would about being in the Times or being on the BBC and stuff, because for lots of reasons, but it's just what we're used to now as well, especially for anyone that's now in their 20s thinking about setting something up. The first thing that we did was set up a Facebook and Twitter page at Here for Good. It isn't the most important thing to us, and I think that's just as a result of specifically what we do, which is we tend to take on really complex cases for quite vulnerable people. So we end up working with charities who direct people to us rather than people chancing across us on Twitter and Facebook. Yeah. But what it is really important for us to use that for is to be taken seriously when we then go to funders or to politicians and things. They sort of look at your charity's Twitter following and they sort of think, okay, you know, if you've got 10 followers, they're sort of like, oh, is this just a scam?
Yeah.
If you've got 1,000, then they might be like, oh, okay, this is a legit charity that people are doing. So that's where I think the base point for any organisation is. Like, you sort of need these days to have a social presence to seem legit. And then for other businesses, it's increasingly important. As you said, you know, there are businesses who spend millions and millions of pounds every year just on Instagram and Facebook marketing. And there's a reason, because it works. And so, you know, depending on what your business is, it can be increasingly important. The other thing I would say is there's a sort of brand identity on social, which I think is really important. But also a founder's own presence is really important. So there are things that I would say on my Twitter that I would never say on the Here for Good Twitter. And there are things that Here for Good would post on Twitter that I don't agree with personally. But having them linked and having but distinct is really important, and I think founders should always feel confident about setting up their own pages and you know, taking the lead, especially on Twitter, I'd say, because it's sort of more of a public debatey forum. Because then they can get involved in issues that relate to their business but maybe not directly, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. It is so interesting, isn't it? Because you've been caught out before by, you know, getting emails about these amazing businesses and thinking, oh, you and your one follower, you know, you can take a hike, I think. But it is becoming more and more interesting, I think, to see how businesses are using social media. Because you get sponsored posts and you get all that sort of stuff. And I suppose it does differ, doesn't it? Because I think with Here for Good, you wouldn't, because it is all confidentiality and vulnerability, you wouldn't be like, this is so-and-so and they, you know, need this. Yeah. It's not a jewellery business. So I guess it does vary for, like, different people. Just to kind of finish off, I think, if you could sit the younger you down, you know, 22-year-old you down, and just be like, look, mate, you need some advice before you're about to venture into this big old business world, what would you kind of say to the past you? Have you got any, like, wise words?
The first thing that I would say is don't be a pushover. It's actually really easy, because it's one of those other things. Even if you have the confidence to set something up and to run with it, it's really easy to think, oh, but this person who's helping me is so much more experienced than I am. They obviously know better than me. And that's not to say that you shouldn't listen to them, because sometimes and often they might be right. But there are definitely times that I've had over the last couple of years where I've taken a decision just because someone who is advising me and is advising me to the best of their ability and based on their experience says something, and I think, okay, well, they must know better than me, and it hasn't proven to be the right thing. So I think part of being a founder of anything is having belief in yourself, and that's sort of what motivates you to get set up, but also what should motivate you to sort of trust your instincts to some extent. And then I guess the other thing that I would say is I've learned that it's not that deep.
It's I not something love that, that I've always so known. Much. I really want that on a t-shirt.
it's genuinely so true, and I say it to everyone now. But it took me a long time to realise that. There are so many things that seem like they're the worst thing in the world. And at the time, you know, you really think they are. But it's not that deep, you know.
I love that.
Even if you're working in a business or a charity or whatever it is that's where the impact of your decisions is quite big, you know, if you're working for a vulnerable person's charity, for example, you obviously don't want to make mistakes. But you should always recognise that it's not that deep, because you can always, in the worst case scenario, rectify it. And you might feel like at the time that you can't and there's no way out of it, but there always is. And you know, I wish I'd known that rather than having all those sleepless nights when I was 22.
Yeah, I literally love that. That's such a nice way to finish off. Just like, whatever your, you know, business venture, wherever it takes you, it's not that deep. Just Yeah, just fuck it, do it. If it makes you happy, do it. I love that.
Exactly, absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I feel really inspired now, and I hope it's helped a lot of people out with their aspirational business ventures. Oh, amazing, man. That was so good.
That was so good. Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening. If you've had a nice time, please do subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you've got a topic that you want us to navigate together, just let me know. And why not binge all the other episodes? Give us a follow at Navigating Your Twenties Podcast on Instagram and Facebook to stay up to date. And see you next time on Navigating Your Twenties.